Hi, and welcome to Detox, Talks the Detox, a podcast where we talk to some of the world's finest leaders about their detox rituals and how they maintain continuity in a world of noise and chaos. How they make sure that the criticism that the world puts on them doesn't affect their insight and they still continue to perform as well as they do. Thanks for tuning in. This is Kunal Sundaramani, and you are listening to Detox, Talks the Detox.
We have Vivek Sharma on the podcast. Vivek is the managing director for Panasonic in India and has had one of the longest and most rewarding careers of everyone who's been on the podcast. Vivek has a lot of experience to share. Thanks a lot for agreeing to be on the podcast. It's a pleasure to host you.
It's great to be here, Kunal, and I'm delighted.
One of the things that comes in while leading such a major organization at an executive level, and in fact leading at the executive level, is the never-ending routines and about work-life not just being work-life. And as you work on the cutting edge of technology towards creating a better future and technology that enables a better future, there very often comes in times when work hours aren't just work hours, specifically at an executive level. In the midst of all these constantly increasing routines, how do you keep yourself detoxed and focused and make sure you can give your best at everything that you're doing?
Kunal, my observation is that, you see, companies are about many things. But end of the day, if you look at it, companies are not about technology. Companies are not about profits. Companies are not about manufacturing. But companies are largely about people. So as a leader, I've always believed that the people should be the focus of your attention at all times. So taking care of our people, and that includes me, taking care of myself, has been the core value that we have started our entire culture to be grounded on. So for example, when I joined the company, we used to work 6 or sometimes 7 days a week. You'll be surprised. So I quickly realized that while people are putting their best, people are very open, people are very enthusiastic, people are totally engaged. But the fact is, their lives would be much better if their families had them for a longer time and work-life balance was more. So the day I became managing director, we took the call that we would work 5 days every week. And since then, there's not a single day or there's not a single person I've met who doubted that. So we started with that work-life balance. And from there, we have continued. Leadership is one of the most modern popular subjects. If you do a Google search, leadership and love, apart from one other word which I would rather not take, are the most popularly searched, items on the Google. But leadership is not anything complicated. And as leaders, we must make sure we love our people enough to see that their health is very, very important and it's taken care of, not only by them, but by the organization as a whole. So we have tried our best to facilitate that. While I'll come to what I do on an individual level, but for our employees, we run different types of contests. For example, we have a contest called as Dangal. Dangal is very simple. Dangal in India means a wrestling match. So our people have a match of sorts. They start on a 90-day cycle, and we have a nutritionist who guides every employee on what sort of meals or foods or liquids they should drink. And the same nutritionist is available to all employees. And the employee who is able to lose maximum weight and is able to improve his BMR, he's declared the winner. And we give 5 prizes. So that's one way to kick it off. But also the nutritionist guides people on how nutrition is important. And important to everybody in the organization. So if you really go to the basics, detox comes from the word toxins. And every body produces toxins, just like any machine produces byproducts, which it sort of expels. So also the body has toxins. Now, the funny part is people believe that we need to detox. Without detoxing, we can't get rid of toxins. But that's a myth, really. Because we must remember two things. One is the body has its detoxer already in place. Our liver, helped by the kidneys, is already a detox mechanism God has made for all of us. What happens is when we overdo, like before the podcast we were discussing, some people overdo on alcohol. Some people overdo on drugs. Some people overdo on rich, oily food, all of that. So that is when, you know, you sort of overpower the natural toxin regulator in your body, the liver, and put it to strain. And that's when you need to go for detox diets. So what a detox diet basically does is it eliminates the toxins, improves your health, and promotes weight loss and agility, making you able to be more energized and deliver much more. So as an individual, I have been a moderate person right through my life. My upbringing is from a very lower middle class family. You know, I come from a city called Pune and my wife comes from Bhopal. Both of us have very, very middle class upbringings. So we have been taught, for example, a vegetarian diet is good for you.
Right.
So I am a pure vegetarian. I don't even take eggs. That pure vegetarian, of course, is an Indian definition. Anywhere abroad, they don't understand it. So I religiously drink at least 3 liters of water every day. I have as many, you know, fruits during the day I can. I must make sure that I have my 6 kilometer, 1 hour walk every morning without fail. And I must make sure that to the extent possible, I will carry my food from home. I avoid outside food, you know. So these are sort of the things. Now, there are people who become experts. So some of them, they use laxatives, they use diuretics, you know, they use external vitamins and minerals to add as supplements. And, you know, all that people are doing as a fad. But to my mind, if you keep a healthy diet, you keep yourself vegetarian or vegan, even better. For example, animal foods, animal fats, or animal dairy products. If you can minimize in your food and totally eliminate meat, right? That's the way forward. And if you want antioxidants like teas, or you want food with high fiber, you know, so it sort of makes your job easier. Because end of the day, the body is like a machine and it's working 24/7 and we are really, you know, overstraining it. So acids and toxins are definitely going to be generated, especially in our modern life, and we need to flush it out. If we are aware of this, any human being I know will not rest easy. They will want to detoxify and they will make things conducive to health, you know. Because one has to really remember that if we don't take care of detoxifying and toxins get excessive in the body, then it's going to result in acidity. It's going to cause bloating. It's going to cause water retention leading to high weight. And then some people have constipation. And all of this will give you the 3 killer diseases that, you know, really cause roughly 65% of the deaths in India. Diabetes, blood pressure, and cholesterol. India is the diabetes capital of the world. And this is ignominious. We must get out of this tap. So detoxification and getting rid of toxins in a healthy manner, that's the need of the hour. That's the first priority to yourself, your promise of good health that each one of us must live up to. I mean, that's my personal opinion and I have lived it all my life. 35 years on the corporate front and 23 years as a young man when I started my career. So I just got myself, you know, I achieved superannuation on 1st of October. So 58 years I've lived life following these rules and you'll be surprised. In my farewell speech, I said it and nobody believed me that I have a blood pressure of 120/80. I'm diabetes free. And even at this age of 58, I have a head of full hair. So that's a sign of good health and having practiced what I preached all my life.
That's wonderful. So this is, I love the idea of how very often as a leader, we very often consider taking care of everyone who works with us, but we forget ourselves. And when we, right. when we think of taking care of people, also taking care of ourselves. So right. when you move towards this, you expressed that there was that a moment of realization where you decided that after that, no one should work for 6 or 7 days and we need to limit it to 5 days. So what was that moment of realization that left that deep impact that called that became the trigger for the change?
See, that realization came much earlier than, you know, my father was just about going to retire in a year or so. And he had a funny lifestyle in the sense that he would have a heavy breakfast, he would avoid lunch, and he would reach home by about 7:30, right? And then he would dine and go to bed by 9. And next morning, he would have to rush off to office by 8:30. So once he had such a huge attack of acidity, he was hospitalized. And he had acute pain. He couldn't eat anything. And in a matter of a week, he lost almost 4 kgs of weight and had to be hospitalized. So that's when, you know, reality hit him. And when it hit him, as the elder son in the family, I was the one who had to do the doctor's beckoning. So that's when it hit me that eating right food, eating at the right time, keeping a right amount of balance between your home and work life, and not tiring yourself beyond a point. So if you work smarter, you work better with more effectiveness, you're more valuable to your organization. And that realization, it hit me when my father was hospitalized, and it has stayed with me ever since. And whoever I talk to, I make sure that when a new joinee comes in or when I attend the introductory, you know, induction lecture for all our management trainees or our graduate apprentice trainees, this is one thing I make it a point to inform them and tell them and stress upon very, very aggressively. I'm using the word aggressive, but yes, that's what I am in that meeting about this particular point. But I'm very, very clear that this makes a difference not only for the person, not only for us as team members, but also for the organization. And that, therefore, this is something we can't ignore.
That's so true. And overall, I really believe in epiphanies, because there are these small moments that are so, so small that we very often do not even notice them, but they leave a deeper impact than anything else. They very often aren't very prominent. So now when you're moving to the next part of your life, and after superannuation, if I pronounce it right, Superannuation.
Superannuation. Yes, that's right.
Okay. Throughout this corporate journey of 35 years, were there any moments that were pretty minor, which would normally just get ignored, but they really stayed with you and left a deep impact?
There are many. I could probably write a book. Because, you see, our experiences of 35 years, I would have worked with probably lakhs of people. You know, if you look at all stakeholders, I would have impacted or influenced or interacted with so many people. And there are so many stories and so many lessons one learned. So one lesson which happened in during my stint with Morphy Richards is an interesting sort of, although not connected directly to detox, but it's a lesson which, when you mention, it's got to be short. So that's one short story I remember. I was with Morphy Richards, and we had this joint venture between Morphy Richards and Bajaj Electricals. Bajaj Electricals was marketing the entire range of Morphy Richards in the South Asia region. So Mr. Shekhar Bajaj, who's the chairman of the company, and I, we were reviewing one of our sales conferences. So during it turned out that our working capital had got way too extended. And the result of a little bit of misplanning of inventories. So he asked me that, Mr. Sharma, what do you think? I mean, the inventories have gone through the roof. So I said, Mr. Bajaj, not to worry too much, because, you know, we make a very healthy margin. So if we don't keep inventory, we may lose sales. And if we lose sales, we lose the entire margin. So it's better to spend a little bit more on keeping high inventory than to risk loss of margins. So he gave me a big smile. You know, Mr. Shekhar Bajaj is one of the real humble and very, very grounded and, you know, soft-spoken leaders you can have anywhere in the world. He made a very simple one-sentence statement. He said, Mr. Sharma, do you think you have delegated this or have you relegated it? What he meant was that normally managers delegate things. But here, it's not only delegation, you have delegated it and forgotten about it. So that the issue has got relegated and it has lost total focus. And as a result, the inventories have gone through the roof. But in such a polite manner, you know, he gave me a scathing advice, which really made my ears turn red that day. But this is something, it's a lesson I haven't forgotten till date. And now I have benefited from that in my current stint. For example, this year, as a company, we will cross 4,200 crores in sales. But we will be the most profitable company in the country with a profit of 700 crores. An operating profit of 700 crores is only possible if your inventories, your stock in trade, and your supply chain are absolutely working at the top of their peak, totally effectively. So that advice has stayed with me and helped me improve my act in the times after that. So that's one story I have not forgotten, can't forget.
that is so phenomenally put. And yeah, it's an experience that I really love. The thing I really love about epiphanies are that very often there are these moments that have been happening for years. This is one thing I've noticed with so many epiphanies. Like, there's something that you continuously notice, but one fine day someone points it out and it's a whole new perspective. It feels like being introduced to a whole new side of things.
Right. It opens your eyes.
Most definitely.
It's a revelation. And why I remember this story is anybody else in that position, including myself, probably I have been a little bit rude. But the delegation and relegation, you know, the two words are so similar sounding, but mean so different things. So, simple question. Have you delegated this or relegated it? My God, I haven't forgotten it. Although this is about 9 years back. So it's like that. Yes, you're right.
The line is so lovely put. Just here, like it stays with you.
right.
I think one of the keys of being a good leader is really being able to leave a deep impact without saying too many words.
That's right.
So there's
one of the communication principles that the lesser words you use for communication, the more crisper, the more impactful it will be. That's what advertising is all about. You're right. Absolutely.
So having had gone through a corporate journey with so many brands, and there's such an emotional element to things which you do, given that like something like a television has an emotional element in so many people's lives, that is where they build up family moments. And with all of that, with creating products that are present in so many households, is there any the emotional element associated to it? How were you able to relate to that in your personal life? And did it ever end up putting an even deeper impact at the way you look at work?
See, work for me has been worship. And, you know, the way we were brought up as I mentioned, if I'm being polite, if I say middle class, actually we were very lower middle class. And what we were brought up on was a surfeit of values. The importance to books, the importance to education, you know, the importance of knowledge and honesty and integrity in every moment you live and breathe on this planet. So that when I started my journey, I never imagined I would be managing director of a company with 10,000 people one day. I mean, that's I never even dreamt of it. People say you have a 5-year plan and you have a 10-year plan and what do you plan for 25 years? I think those are very intelligent people. I am not so intelligent. So I never planned so far ahead. But what I wanted always to do was to make sure that whoever you work with, not only him, but his family, his ecosystem, you should impact very, very, you know, positively and very, very effectively so that his happiness, his feeling of well-being, his feeling of security goes up. So in this perspective, one of the decisions we took after the earlier decision I mentioned to you, the 7-day week reduced to the 5-day week, one decision we took was every employee must be insured. And if, God forbid, there is any accident or illness or any mishap and the person dies on duty, what happens to the rest of his family? So we got them, each employee, insured. So once the insurance was done, people said we should give them 30 months salary, and somebody said 45 months. So I said, look, let's imagine somebody's got children to educate, right? So if you see 10 plus 2, or if you see school plus graduation, or you see engineering plus post-graduation, you need a minimum of 5 to 7 years, you know, where security and consistency of income is a must. So we took a call, and my management team and I, we discussed it, and we decided that let's do it for 7.5 years. So every employee, if there was a mishap or a misfortune or death, his family would continue to get his take-home salary for 80 months after his death. So the thought behind this, I've shared the reason. Now, I'll give you another example. What happened one sudden month, about a year ago, one of our employees, he lost his mother. He was staying in Bangalore, Karnataka, and he lost his mother. So as is customary, we all go, and the ashes are immersed either in the sea or in one of the very holy rivers. So he took his mother's ashes and he went to the river Kaveri. And at one stretch, the undercurrents were so very strong that he himself was washed away and he drowned and died. So a family like that is hit by double tragedy. And on top of that, if there's no security, what happens? My God, I can't think what would have been the case. But fortunately, we had taken such decisions. So that not only ensured that they got the take-home salary for 80 months, but also we had insured all our employees for life. So the family was not left in the lurch. Their security, their well-being, and their continued happiness was insured. Of course, they would definitely miss the employee, and all their life they would be very, very sad. But at least their own well-being, their security, their own future happiness is taken care of. So if this is known to employees, the employees feel more secure. They will feel themselves more engaged to the organization. And they are feeling a lot more reassured. Their future of their families are reassured. So that makes for very, very proactive, very, very happy people, a very, very interdependent team, and an atmosphere of work which is to be seen to be believed. So these are things, you know, which as leaders, we must look for opportunities to create such what you have called epiphanies for our employees. Because what are leaders for? Leaders are not just meant for lead. They have to take care of their followers. They have to take care of their employees. And leaders must love their people. And unless we love our people, can we make sure that we will work towards our people being more happy and happy before we are? That's the job. That's the role. And that's really speaking what leaders are for. So as a leader, I think there are many such moments, but a couple of these moments which I've shared with you, I mean, they have left a mark not only on me, but they have left a mark on the organization. And it's not that our organization has only one leader, that's me. There are leaders all over, and there are leaders at every level in the organization. And I only hope and wish, and I'm sure in a way, I'm quite positive that such actions inspire the other leaders in the organization to behave similarly for the rest of their team, so that happiness, security, well-being, health, all of these are believed by every person in the organization. And these values cascade down to the front level and beyond that into all stakeholders, your dealers, your channel partners, your vendors, your suppliers, you know, all of that. And that's how your circle of happiness, your circle of well-being, your circle of security widens. And as an organization, we must do that for the entire ecosystem in which we operate. And as leaders, it's our responsibility, it's our job, and something that we must be held accountable for, more than profits and more than anything else. That's my personal opinion.
I think conscious leadership, and more than anything, we've built up so many terms for it in today's world about what is it to be a good leader, and all the facts around that. But at the core, it is just genuinely caring about people without any second ideas. It's like people feel that leadership is about acting as if you care for everyone. But it's really just about caring for people genuinely.
Yes, you're right, Kunal. Because, see, you can care for people only if you love them. Now, the way the world is going, and this is a Western concept, love is meaning only physicality and attraction. You know, love is far beyond that. Love is something which is all-encompassing. And it's not just the physicality, not just the attraction, not just the sexuality. The sexuality is a very minor part of it. Love is, you know, a leader who doesn't love his people cannot be a caring leader. And a leader who's not a caring leader cannot be a productive leader. Because productivity is the result of your love and caring. We say to everybody that we treat people like our family. But then we have an appraisal, and if somebody doesn't do well in appraisal, then we make a performance improvement plan, and then we give them 3 months, and then we tell them to go. But if you really look at it down to the brass tacks, if your son was not doing well or your brother was not doing well, will you give him 3 months and a performance improvement plan and then leave him on the roads? So there is a lot of talk. And Kunal, actually, if you look at it, this concept is not an Indian concept. You know, if you go back to the late 70s, 1970s and 80s, there was a person called Milton Friedman. He was an economist and a management thinker. So this concept, actually, Milton Friedman brought out. And his key thought was, the responsibility of business is to maximize profits within the bounds of the law. So as long as you're legal, your first job is to make profits. But what about ethics? You know, the pharma companies, for example, they a tablet that costs 10 rupees, they will charge 800 rupees. So there is ethics to it. So it's not only about profits. It's about people more than anything else. Now, what Milton Friedman, you know, talked about in the 70s and 80s, then people like Jack Welch, they made a virtue out of it. In the 80s and 90s and the early, you know, 2000s. So Jack Welch was called Neutron Jack. His philosophy was the 5% get promoted and the top 5% get promoted and the bottom 5% get fired. Now, where is the leader? Where are you, is your love? Where are you caring for your people? You are only bothered about profits. And so you see GE, at one time, the organization it was the engine of growth for the entire US economy. But where is GE today? It may be still a good company, but it's not a great company. And you can't just prioritize shareholders, you know, interests over customers and employees. My personal opinion is your first priority should be employees. The second should be customers. If you take care of your employees and customers, the shareholders and all other stakeholders will automatically, you know, get taken care of. So it's important that we as leaders must love our people, we must care for our people, and we must make sure that all our philosophies, our core values, and our strategy must hold people at the center of the pie. So if you are expecting that you will prioritize shareholders' interests over customers and employees, what that means is it's like a coach who wants to build a team that the spectators want to see. He's not interested in making a strong team that will win. He's wanting to make a team which spectators like. That's not the way you build a team. So same way in an organization, you must take care of your stakeholders because they put the money behind the brand, behind the company, behind the entire infrastructure. But the fact is, you will better take care of shareholder interest if you take care of employees first and the customers. Both of them, if they are engaged, they are taken care of, they love the company. The company can go only one way, and that is up. That's something I personally subscribe to very, very strongly.
So I think one of the things which really came out between the shift of how people started looking at companies was Warren Buffett's approach against Ben Graham's approach. When he took the shift of rather than just focusing on profitability and what companies generate more profit, focusing on companies which have a management which care for people.
Right.
And
you're right, because the example you're given is very good, because Graham's approach was more the monetary money over everything approach. Whereas if you see the other approach, the approach was very simple. Whenever he wanted to buy a company, you know, he would go and meet the CEO and ask him a few simple questions. And when he saw that the CEO is pro people, he's a guy who loves his people, who cares for his people, and his people love him, he was that much more, you know, Hathaway, the company which he founded, was much more interested right. in investing in companies who had that sort of leadership. Graham's was a mathematical model, more about profits than anything else. So, you're right. That's a very, very, very good example you're given.
Because what really impresses me about Berkshire Hathaway is that the company is valued at company's market asset value is over $100 billion. And its permanent employees, the employees which work at Berkshire Hathaway are less than 30.
That's right.
It's
a unique organization in many ways. But of course, it's a different type of organization. There are not many organizations like that in the world.
I don't think there is any.
He's a great leader in his own right. Yes. He's a great leader in his own right. And he's a very caring person. Mm. A person who cares for the people of the companies in which he invests, he's got the head at the right place.
Right. I was reading Graham's book the other day, The Intelligent Investor. And so I make sure to read the Berkshire Hathaway annual reports. And it's really lovely to see the transitions Warren Buffett went through when he's not just targeting Graham's leadership skills, but he's side by side also targeting a lot more on the empathetic side of it.
Right.
So
empathy is one of the really, you know, important attributes of a great leader.
It's lovely to see, because a lot of these concepts which you talk about, people end up giving them up at a very early stage when they're starting up, given the fact that they feel they can never grow as big as $1 billion plus if they hold on to values.
Right.
And with people like Donald right. Trump, I think it's. I'm not sure if you can comment on this, but yeah, with yes. people like Donald Trump and with the way they act and showing them as role models just ends up spoiling the whole equation and how people look at building companies.
Mm. That's right.
I'm not going to put you in a situation. But I'm not sure if you can comment on it because...
No, I can always comment on it, because end of the day, as leaders and as human beings and as citizens, we have our own right. And
right.
the way I look at it is that Donald Trump himself, being a businessman of a different type, most of his decisions come not from a leader, but from a business person who has become a leader.
Right.
And that really impacts sometimes adversely as well, because when you are leading a nation which is the most, you know, powerful nation on earth, you have to leave business aside. Your responsibility is to a much larger part of the planet, and you have to be more responsible. You have to look at the long term. You have to look at not only Americans, but as the most powerful nation, you have to look at the interests and the future well-being of the entire world. The world is a village. We are all in together. And if you really look at the philosophy and you look at the way the world is, we are actually complicating things. If you look at the way God, when he made the earth, you know, God's plan was simple. What he said or what he thought was, I mean, the way I perceive it, no one is superior and no one is inferior, but no one is equal either, you know, and we are all unique and incomparable. So as unique and incomparable beings on this planet, each one of us has a right. We have our views. And unless we are destructive to the planet or to the people at large, we should be allowed to expound our views. And, you know, as long as we are not destructive, the democratic values and all of that has to be taken care of. So sometimes, you know, big powerful nations forget that. And people who are very short-term oriented or people who are more interested on the business side, they get a short-sighted look at things. And at times, you know, leaders who are businessmen do end up making mistakes. But that said, one has to grant it to Donald Trump that as far as his success is concerned, I would say economically, USA has had better days under his leadership than for the term preceding it. Of course, the COVID has put a huge dampener, but let's see how the elections pan out for him. But the right. economic results during his tenure were better than that in the previous tenure.
Right.
And had it not been for a bit of his gaffes and a bit of the COVID, I'm sure he would have otherwise got re-elected. And I'm not sure whether he will be re-elected now. But right. even now, his chances are pretty bright. You can't write him off even now.
So prior to moving to the rapid fire round, there's this lovely idea of Ken Wilber. If you get a chance, do check it out, about human beings evolving from looking at from a patriotic side. So he took it from this side, how we first look at a religious side and we differentiate based on religions. Then we differentiate based on countries. And then there needs to come a point where we will differentiate between planets. And until we finally universally accept. And it's really nicely put about accepting people for people. And when we go to moon next time, we should have an Earth logo on it.
That's a good point. But you're right that, you see, leaders who are true leaders, worthy of the coming generations, who are really evolving at a very good, you know, pace and direction, I think they have to transcend all of these small things. They have to be big-hearted and they have to look at the issues as you described it. You have to look at it totally with a different perspective. And I'm sure the way the leaders of the world are coming, we will have a better crop of leaders. And the youngsters are smarter, more intelligent, and more for the planet and more large-hearted than the past generations of leaders we've had.
Moving to the rapid-fire round. So these are a couple of quick questions. Answer as per what you feel primary and whatever you feel most authentic to, and as fast as you can. As soon as you say the last syllable, we move to the next.
Right.
Windows or Mac?
Mac.
Morning person or night person?
Morning person.
Best compliment ever received?
You love your people, Mr. Sharma.
Phone calls or texts?
Phone calls.
Favorite song?
It's a Hindi song. Maine tere liye hi saat rang ke sapne chune. This is from the film Anand, which is sung by Mukesh. And it's a song that resonates not only in meaning, but also in the lyrics. For my own children, for most of my employees, and for, I mean, all of the employees and the entire world for that matter. We have to live the dreams for our children, our country, and all of them.
If you could change one thing in your past, what would it be?
Nothing I would change.
One constant you would want in your future?
Good health.
Laptop or mobile?
Mobile.
Laptop or desktop?
Laptop.
Mobile or iPad?
iPad.
Someone you're inspired by?
My father.
If you woke up in 2030, what's the first thing you would want to Google?
I would like to Google where my family is.
If you woke up in 2050, what's the first thing you would want to do?
Say good morning to my wife.
One experience that you would never forget?
My birth.
That's a brand new one. Favorite movie?
Anand.
Favorite web series?
Our Planet on Netflix.
Two people who really inspire you?
One is my wife and one is my mother. Both of whom are my pillars of strength.
Favorite drink?
Coconut water.
Perfect. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
It was a pleasure, Kunal. And thank you very much. You made it very immersive and very, very enjoyable.
You just heard an episode on the Detox Podcast. Do not forget to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform, whether it is Spotify or iTunes. We are there.